listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the June 2024 issue of Vanity Fair magazine, which features Ayo Adebiri on the cover. This is Vanity Fair, Part A. Now, here's Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief, with the editor's letter. There was really only one choice for the cover star of our TV issue this year. Ayo Adebiri has been collecting awards and accolades for her performance in The Bear throughout the show's first two seasons. And with the third dropping this summer, we couldn't wait to hear about everything she's doing in and out of the kitchen. Leah Fay Cooper headed to Chicago, where The Bear is shooting two consecutive seasons, to talk to Ayo about her upcoming projects. Her adventures on the red carpet, where she's also on a winning streak, and, among other potent concerns, whether oat milk is really all it's cracked up to be. Ayo plays a chef on TV, but her professional experience in real life included an early stint behind a coffee counter. "I loved being a barista because I like order," she told Leah. "There's something kind of satisfying about getting it right." Her many satisfied fans would say she's done so. At Disney, they're also thinking about getting it right. It, in this case, being the succession plan for when CEO Bob Iger vacates his chair at the end of 2026. As Natalie Jarvie and Joy Press report, four in-house executives are emerging as top contenders. The fate of what is fiscally a small nation, chief export entertainment, hangs in the balance, as does Iger's legacy, which suffered some tarnishing when his previous pick for successor flamed out in under 3 years. Natalie and Joy dig into the contenders' backgrounds, bios, and odds, as well as the effect of this ongoing drama on the mood at the Magic Kingdom, where, as one insider puts it, people don't know which horse to bet on. They're afraid to cross anybody. Meanwhile, on location in Colombia, Silvana Paternostro reports on the much-anticipated upcoming Netflix production of 100 Years of Solitude. As she writes, Gabriel Garcia Marquez held the rights to his classic novel close, and there's been no major screen adaptation on his terms, Spanish language, filmed in his home country, until now. Silvana, who has edited an oral history of Marquez, tells a rich tale about trying to do justice to a masterpiece. The streamer is planning a two-part, 16-episode series, drawing from local actors for its cast, and building the fictional town of Macondo from the ground up. And in our already existing city of dreams, also known as Los Angeles, our West Coast editor Britt Hennemuth rides along with Glenn Powell for a morning of flea market browsing and brunching. Catching up with the Anyone But You star about his next movie, Richard Linklater's Hitman, and how he's learned to take fame in stride. Thank you. Here are some of the contributors to the June 2024 issue of Vanity Fair magazine. Matthew Brooks, The Hitman. Glenn Powell was full of positive energy with a mischievous personality and charm, says the England-born South Africa-raised photographer, who was always keen to peel back the layers of his subjects. Brooks is set to release a new book, Expression of Freedom, published by Damiani this fall. Stella Greenspan, Funny Girl. The stylist and fashion director likes a sense of playfulness on set, which boded well for cover star Ayo Edebiri. The actor, Greenspan says, has the best sense of humor and the most generous and beautiful spirit. Janine DiGiovanni, Justice Without Borders. An award-winning war reporter for more than three decades, DiGiovanni founded the Reckoning Project in 2022 after Russia's invasion of Ukraine. She is the author of eight books. The latest is The Vanishing Faith, Loss, and the Twilight of Christianity in the Middle East, published by Public Affairs. She lives in Paris. Silvana Paternostro, Magical Thinking. Gabo died 10 years ago, but he keeps showing up, full of surprises, says Paternostro of Gabriel Garcia Marquez. She is currently working on a movie with director Peter Weber based on Solitude and Company, published by Seven Stories, her oral history of the Nobel laureate's life. Adam Suralski, Take No Prisoners. I had no idea I would go to seven countries and spend over a year waiting for a denouement, says Suralski, an executive producer of and the inspiration for Netflix's The Recruit, of his piece detailing America's secretive and unorthodox efforts to free its citizens held abroad. Sean Martinborough, Shots in the Dark. Martinborough was immediately inspired by the disturbing nature of Catherine Eben's story, which tracks a counterfeit version of Ozempic. An award-winning artist and author of Red Hood, The Hill, he is next adapting Neil Gaiman's Anansi Boys for Dark Horse Comics. Nicholas Galitzine Kicks into High Gear by Britt Hennemuth. Photographs by Nick Riley Bentham. Opening photo shows Galitzine reclining on a motorcycle at the beach. Nicholas Galitzine has built a career playing princes, opposite a female pop star, an all-American himbo, and an Academy Award-winning actress. Galitzine brings particular depth to even the frothiest of projects. Now with a wicked turn playing a deceitful son opposite Julianne Moore in Mary and George on Stars and depicting a Harry Styles-esque singer in The Idea of You with Anne Hathaway, Galitzine shows no signs of slowing down. I feel like I've been threatening to launch for a while. I'm revving the engine of the car, but we haven't quite taken off yet. This summer, that's all about to change. Born in southwest London to an entrepreneurial father and Greek financier mother, being an actor was like joining the circus. The rugby stud was close to going professional, but injuries benched him for his final year of secondary school. After overcoming stage fright in the ensemble of Guys and Dolls, he followed friends and a girl who I was really into at the time to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival for a last hurrah before we all went our separate ways. Going up to Scotland, getting shit-faced, doing plays. Success came quickly. Galitzine caught the eye of an agent, but his co-stars had less luck. I felt a huge amount of imposter syndrome. I went from having never acted before to being the lead of a movie in the space of 2 months, which was really, really bizarre. On adjusting to fame around his friends, I felt like, was I gloating, or was it too self-deprecating? It just felt like this impossible task. But then over time, the more comfortable I got in my skin. Since then, his hot streak has continued, blowing past the limits usually in place for the heartthrob. It's been so validating to see and hear people noticing the versatility in my work. his turn as the psychotic high school quarterback Jeff in the sapphic comedy Bottoms proved to be an unforgettable experience. We joked God must hate the guys because we had to deal with locust, lightning, and torrential storms to finish this brilliant movie. We were bonded for life in the sweltering heat of New Orleans wearing skin-tight American football uniforms. In the idea of you, Gallatin and Hathaway were clear about making the pulpy fanfic serve a purpose. We both viewed the intimacy as integral to the storyline, but not salacious. I think female pleasure has been reduced to the sidelines for so long, and it felt like we were on a mission to really make an important movie for women turning 40 and later on, and just giving women a sense of ownership and empowerment. And that sounds almost silly to say, but that's where we've been. I think as an industry, we have needed to improve upon the implicit misogyny that I think has existed. We just work really well together. I think it's because we share a lot of values and we just really get on. His trip to South by Southwest with the idea of you was particularly moving. The fans' enthusiasm left Hathaway in tears. As for Gallatin, it's filling me with confidence, a quiet confidence.
Thank you.
Flashdance by Nate Freeman for photographer Tyler Mitchell's Summer's No Vacation. Tyler Mitchell has been making art at a breakneck pace since 2018 when he photographed Beyoncé for Vogue and became the first black photographer to lens the cover. Summer will be a landmark season for the 29-year-old, with shows at CO Berlin and the High Museum of Art in his native Atlanta. Opening June 1st, Mitchell's exhibit in Berlin will showcase his imagery, alongside work by his friends and contemporaries, including painter and sculptor Rashid Johnson and fashion designer Grace Wales Bonner, to convey the lineage of not only black image makers and photographers, but black artists, and the multiple modes of expression that are possible around contemporary ideas of black life, Mitchell said. Come June 21st, the High Museum of Art will explore the ethos of his image-making. His solo show there will be the first ever full photography show installed in the museum's Stint Wing Special Exhibition Galleries. Seeing my show in proximity to, say, a painting show next door or the European collections could create some interesting conflicts and dialogues. Now this from Daisy Shaw Ellis, On the Wings of Love, with photograph by Suzanne Saraf. Valentino Garavani Butterfly Mules. In 1967, after years spent harnessing a rainbow of color, Valentino Garavani showed a collection in white, beige, and ivory as his namesake Italian fashion house prepares to evolve from the creative direction of the beloved Pierpaolo Piccioli to that of virtuoso Alessandro Michele. Today, the palette remains. These refined leather slides are minimal and modern, but still embrace feminine frivolity with butterfly embellishments taking flight. As the brand undergoes its own metamorphosis, they're a chic reminder of just how beautiful change can be. Now, what's trending? Role model Naomi Campbell and her 40-year career are immortalized in Naomi in Fashion, which accompanies an exhibit at the Victoria and Albert Museum. On display, pieces from Campbell's archive, alongside highlights from her fight for diversity in the industry and of her relationships with designers. In the photos, Naomi Campbell wears a multicolored Gianni Versace gown in February 1991. Strike a pose, Loro piano hat, Balmain jacket, Valentino shirt, Pat McGrath Labs lip pencil and Belle Amour, Saint Laurent by Anthony Vaccarello top, Gucci sunglasses, Versace dress, David Yurman necklace, Prada top, Naomi and Boss coat, NARS blush in Orgasm X, Matteo choker, Ami skirt, Naomi in Fashion, Naomi Campbell, edited by Sonnet Stanfill and Elizabeth Murray. Published by Rizzoli. Alaya shoes, The Row bag, Uzo serum. Thank you. track record. Julie Maritou joins a select list of 20 artists who have made fine art out of fast cars by Brett Burke. BMW's latest art car almost didn't come into existence, says its creator, Julie Maritou. I actually tried to turn it down. It's not that she wasn't interested. The abstract artist has long been a fan of the program, which began nearly 50 years ago and has featured collaborations with such luminaries as Frank Stella, Andy Warhol, Jenny Holzer, David Hockney, Alexander Calder, Kyle Fey, Roy Lichtenstein, Esther Malangu, Jeff Koons, and Robert Rauschenberg. And she was honored to be chosen by an independent international jury of top curators and other art world leaders. But she was stumped. I didn't know how to even approach the idea, she says. This was totally out of my imagination, painting a car. Attending a race with BMW changed her perspective. There, she witnessed the spirit of co-creation among the engineers, designers, drivers, and crew. This resonated artistically. It's about making dreams, Maritou says. It's fully about pursuing something in the imagination, and in physics, that is just about the possibility of what could be. Like its forebears, her art car uses as its canvas a BMW race car, in this case, the automaker's menacing M-hybrid V8. Maritou's design is an original work, inspired in part by her large-scale painting Every Win, which employs her signature phantasmic cartographic symbols that pierce geopolitical orthodoxies surrounding race, colonialism, and power. But the adaptive process wasn't as simple as wrapping the car in the artwork. She wanted the vehicle to feel as if it traversed the painting, as if the painting was a portal, appearing like it's glitching when still, but a fluid blur when moving. Opportunities to view the work at speed will arise in June, when the car participates in the famed 24 Hours of Le Mans endurance race in France. There, on the track, it will earn its spurs, its badge of honor as a race car, says Thomas Gerst, BMW's head of cultural engagement, before entering BMW's permanent collection. Previous artists have had similarly amalgamative experiences. It's past the scale of just playing an instrument or making an arrangement and playing it. It's being able to have that performed by an orchestra, says Koons of creating his 2010 car, an M3 GT2, covered in eruptions of bright color. It's like being able to participate in something that is conducted. This spirit of collaboration will persevere through 2025, when Maritou co-hosts a Pan-African artistic workshop series aimed at communally producing, as she says, indigenous, individual, local content generated and made by and for Africans. The outcome of these gatherings will be shown, along with her art car, at the Zietz Museum of Contemporary Art Africa, MOCAA, in Cape Town, late next year. It's going to be an abstract caravan, says Koyo Kuo, executive director of Zietz Mocha, of a 9-month, 8-city project. Julie being such a powerful abstract artist, we needed to construct the idea of the caravan itself in ways that make it more interesting, more challenging, more generative. The art car could have disruptive reverberations in Maritou's own work as well. Julie says herself that her art car is a shout-out to Frank Stella, says Gerst of Stella's scrawl-pieced, graphic-patterned 1976 3.0 CSL. I always tell her that Stella was a two-dimensional artist before his art car, and it turned him into a three-dimensional artist. The pioneering minimalist, who died in May, became a sculptor, Gerst says, after creating a BMW art car. In the photos, Alexander Calder with his art car, the brand's first, in 1975. Andy Warhol painting a BMW M1, 1979. Julie Maritus, When Angels Speak of Love, Barcelona, 2018. Maritu, the artist BMW M Hybrid V8. V12 LMR by Jenny Holzer, 1999. M3 GT2 by Jeff Koons, 2010. 320i Turbo by Roy Lichtenstein, 1977. 3.0 CSL by Alexander Calder, 1975. 850 CSI by David Hockney, 1995. And M3 Group A by Michael Jagamara Nelson, 1989. Now here's Rob Ledon on books. The Lyricist. In her debut poetry collection, Joan Baez contends with a life spent in the spotlight. In the photo, Joan Baez photographed with some of her creative pursuits. A formidable voice since her days in the 60s era folk and protest movements, Joan Baez has embarked on a new journey of introspection. Her autobiographical debut poetry collection, When You See My Mother, Ask Her to Dance, published by Godin, chronicles her life and rise to fame, from grappling with the trappings of celebrity to navigating the relationships she built along the way, whether it was with her contemporaries, family, or Bob Dylan. Though the Grammy-nominated singer and songwriter has been writing for decades, the 120-page collection, which comprises poems written during the same 7 or 8 years when she was in recovery from sexual abuse, etc., she told Vanity Fair, marks the first time she's sharing her poetry publicly. "I put everything away until I was thinking of making this book. I had to go all over my house and property and office and storage unit to find bits and pieces of it, and that took a long time," she said. "And then I got very excited about it because I had forgotten the poems, and honestly, how good they are." Beyond the page, Baez's artistry takes shape in various media. "Over the years," she says, "her creativity comes and goes on its own time. For instance, my painting arrived out of nowhere. I was looking at someone's gallery of paintings and thought, oh, I could do that." While on the road, she set up canvases on the vanity in her tour bus. "I did that fanatically for a number of years. Most of the stuff that shows up is a challenge, and when I accept it as a challenge, I really love it." Keziah Weir synopsizes these books, six-pack, The Lives of Writers, Time Travel, and More Page-Turners. Bird Milk and Mosquito Bones. Kashmir-born Priyanka Matu details her life in spry essays that include such horrors as a great aunt's violent death, but also find boundless joy. Kids' Word Choices, A Family Recipe, published by Knopf. Fire Exit, Morgan Talty's pensive, probing debut novel, circles a decades-old family rift, centering on tribal lineage and land laws, on Maine's Penobscot Reservation, which separates a father from his child. Published by Tin House. Wives Like Us, a sought-after butler employed by an Oxfordshire wife, keeps the Thomas Good sugar bowls polished and the Instagram influencers in check in Plum Sykes's glossy comedy of manners, published by Harper. The Memo, in Rachel Dodes and Lauren Meckling's Clever Time Warp, a mysterious consortium allows Jenny Green to revisit key moments that have contributed to her suboptimal life and redo them, published by Harper Perennial. Uptown Local, for the final 9 years of Joan Didion's life, Corey Ledbetter worked as her assistant. Ultimately, he describes her endless tissues and delight in children, his complicated family, their shared love of Auden, published by Echo. Tom Gunn, A Cool Queer Life. Michael Knott, co-editor of Tom Gunn's Letters, paints a keen portrait of the poet, from his psychedelic life in Haight-Ashbury to thoughtful dives into his body of work. Published by FSG. On a Limb, a photographer at a marital crossroads finds her muse in an injured ballerina in R.O. Kwan's crackling sensual exhibit. Published by Riverhead. Here, Kwan shares her inspirations. Fast Car, Tracy Chapman, 1988. "I usually listen to one or two songs on repeat while I write, and Fast Car is a song I've looped often. Its story of love pursued and love broken is powerful every time I hear it, and then there's that astonishing voice." Shostakovich Trilogy, Alexei Ratmansky, 2013. "While watching Ratmansky's ballets for the first time, I felt as though the dancing bodies on stage were talking directly to corresponding parts of my body, cell to cell. It was an ecstatic experience, one that soon led me to exhibit's story of a woman who becomes infatuated with a ballerina." The Brother's Son, Netflix, 2024. Kwan calls the show about a triad family's spellbinding, hilarious, and hard to forget. "I'm intensely moved by its explorations of a question I follow in my own fiction. What might you risk to pursue your core desires?" Now for some screen time. Fatherland. Middle-aged men have never exactly been underserved by Hollywood, but TV has gone overboard this year, offering a smorgasbord of muscular historical fiction series tailor-made for dads by Hilary Bursis. In a chart, The Show, Shogun, FX, 17th Century Japan Dad, The Men, Yoshitora Naga, Hiroyuki Sanada, a feudal lord with enemies around every corner. The vibe, grand and sweeping, even when heads are literally rolling. Mustache quotient, powerful, yet dignified. Bechdel rating, healthy. Anna Sawai's Lady Mariko is a full-fledged main character. For dads who think ordering a light beer is a sign of weakness. The Show. Franklin, Apple TV Plus, Revolutionary War Dad. The Men, Michael Douglas as Benjamin Franklin in France. The Vibe, what don't you get? It's Michael Douglas as Benjamin Franklin in France. Mustache quotient, minimal, though the powdered wig budget must be through the roof. Bechdel rating, comme ci, comme ça. For dads who vastly prefer Wawa to sheets and need everyone to know it. The Show, Masters of the Air, Apple TV Plus, World War II Dad. The Men, Nikutigawa, Austin Butler, Callum Turner, and more as brave airmen. The Vibe, Band of Brothers, The New Class. Mustache quotient, strangely weak. Do they carry DOP kits on those planes? Bechdel rating, generally Rosies are doing their riveting off-screen. For dads who happen to love this country, damn it. The Show, A Gentleman in Moscow, Paramount Plus with Showtime, Russian Revolution Dad. The Men, Alexander Rostov, Ewan McGregor, account under Bolshevik house arrest. The Vibe, chilly and refined with a dab of caviar on top. Mustache quotient, strong like bull. Bechdel rating, women pop up, including a film star played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead, but it's Rostov's show. For dads who wouldn't be caught dead in athleisure. The show, The Sympathizer, HBO, Vietnam War Dad. The men, a double agent for North Vietnam known only as the Captain, Hoa Xuan De. The vibe, alternately darkly comic and just plain dark. Mustache quotient, present but understated as befits a spy. Bechdel rating, female characters tend to be martyrs or love interest. For dads who have incredible secrets, you'll learn only many years from now, if ever. The show, Manhunt, Apple TV Plus, Civil War Dad. The men, Edwin Stanton, Tobias Menzies, in hot pursuit of John Wilkes Booth, Anthony Boyle. The vibe, Lincoln minus Lincoln and Steven Spielberg. Mustache quotient, absolutely off the charts. Bechdel rating, well, it's not called Woman Hunt. For dads who would risk it all for one meal with Doris Kearns Goodwin. My Stuff, Wild Card, From Serpentine Diamonds to a Garden Full of Fresh Blooms, creative director Lara Kim has a penchant for the nature of things. Style File, Evening Shoe, Amina Muadi, Statement Bag, Oscar De La Renta, Eyewear, Gentle Monster, Wrist Candy, Bulgari, Closet Treasure, A Vintage Mickey Mouse Sweatshirt, On Beauty, Face Mask, 111 Skin, Signature Lip, MAC Maximal Lipstick, Body Care, You Beauty, At Home, Recent Edition, Dehine Studio by Jane Yang Dehane Moonjar, On the Wall, Ethan Cook, The Unexpected, A Notepad That Looks Like a Real Butter on a Cristoffel Butter Tray, Seeding Atra, Indoor Planters, Vintage Olive Jars, Growing in the Garden, Herbs, Edible Flowers, Shiso Leaves, Zucchini, Tomatoes, and Passion Fruit Flowers. Alfresco Tableware, My New Collection with Crate and Barrel. For Pleasure, Reading The Secret Life of Sunflowers by Marta Molnar. Watching K-Dramas. Doing Anything and Everything. Listening to Whatever My Team is Obsessing Over. Inspired by My Agent, Chloe, who appreciates everything in life. She helps me to remember to do the same. Kind of makes you invincible with anything when anything tough comes along. Also, my friends being so vulnerable and open about anything amongst us, realize how important that is to being grounded. The menu, morning beverage, lemon Fiji water and beet ginger juice. Comfort food, pho or shin ramyun instant noodles. Indulgent snack, strawberry pocky. Revolving dinner reservation, Atomics. Home-cooked specialty, seed crackers, steamed fish, and bitter green salad. On rare days, we make kimchi pancakes or fried chicken. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both Parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.